From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Capitol Notes podcast for this last day of August, last week of August. August is finally over. Are you checking your calendar over there, Anthony?
Isn't today September 1st?
No,
tomorrow.
Today's August 31st. This is a Friday.
Wow.
30 days, have September.
April, June.
And November. Exactly.
All the rest have 31.
I'm so glad we all went to school and on that particular day.
Except for February.
Which has 28 and 29. Okay. Now everyone has turned off the podcast thinking they've downloaded something else by mistake. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio, joined as always by Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, and our friend Laura Kurtzman, the political reporter for the Associated Press, joins us this morning. Laura, thanks for sitting in.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yet another person who was just gracious enough to sit in with Anthony and I and our Looney Tunes on a political podcast. We'll talk about the week's political news. Several interesting stories, but let's talk about the big thing first, if we could. Let's talk about health care. Now that the budget's done, everybody is thinking about the health care reform debate at the state capitol. An interesting week, I thought, and in not a huge number of events, but clearly people are moving and positioning. And, I mean, is it fair to say, let me ask you guys, is it fair to say that really the problem still is trying to figure out who's covered and who pays for it? Is that still really? Let's ask you first. What do you think?
Yes, that's always the problem. Who pays for it? That's always the biggest problem anywhere. And in California, it's a huge problem because we're so big and we have so many uninsured people. It's a fundamentally different situation than Massachusetts, for example. They have something like 10% uninsured and we're 18%. So it just takes a massive amount of money. And California, even, you know, for all its reputation for being a liberal state, it's an anti-tax state. So there really isn't a source of money.
And that's really going to be the ultimate issue is who pays for it. I mean, who's covered is a big policy issue. But when you get to who pays for it, you run right smack dab into the politics of it.
Well, it's more for a number of reasons. Number one, depending on how you structure this the payment, you need a two-thirds vote in the legislature or a simple majority, depending on who pays. But basically, I mean, we should probably go through the bulk of the speaker's plan. The Democrats in the legislature have a plan, Assembly Bill 8, authored by Speaker Fabian Nunez.
And kind of co-authored now by Senator Parada. I mean, it's the Nunez-Parada plan, I guess, to be fair.
They have merged their proposals into one. And employers pay the bulk of the health care in that model, at least a 7.5% payroll tax. Or fee.
Assessment.
No, it's a tax. Well, oh, under the Nunez bill.
Somehow his counsel is a tax. The Speaker's own attorneys have ruled that, it's not a tax, it's a fee, which means...
But the governor's is a fee.
Right.
It's a tax.
God forbid we use the wrong term and tick off the wrong group of people listening.
It's inevitable.
Yes, an assessment.
The governor's plan would have a payroll tax of about half that size, 4%. And also include fees on doctors and health and hospitals to help pay for it. And they both cover different universes of people. That's a lot more detailed. But this week, we saw a new proposal come from the California Restaurants Association and some other business groups. The Restaurants Association were the big opponents of SB2 and was it Prop 72? Was that the number?
2004, right.
They supported the referendum.
Right, yeah. which was basically an employer-based system would have required employers to provide health care to their workers. The Restaurants Association led the effort to repeal that law. And they were successful with the help of Governor Schwarzenegger. But now they're coming out with their own proposal, a 1 cent sales tax to provide health care, basically to try to implement the governor's plan.
Well, what they've come out with, I mean, clearly is what they say is a funding mechanism that they say would be between $5 to $6 billion would generate from an extra penny on the sales tax.
But it's just more of the same of trying to push the burden onto somebody else to pay for it, right? They're saying, don't tax us. We're small employers or it's not just small employers, but low-wage employers, and we have very low profit margins. We can't afford it. Everyone should share the burden. That's what they're saying. But it's always the same game of, oh, yes, we support health care expansions, but, you know, how could you make me pay for it? The doctors said that. The hospitals say that.
It's the hot potato is really what it is. I mean, everybody wants to toss the how you pay for it to somebody else.
Right. And even voters are lukewarm about, even though they say they want everyone to have health insurance, they don't want to pay for it either.
And what's interesting, and then we'll go back to kind of what happened in the Capitol in a moment, but about this whole notion of a ballot initiative for this penny sales tax is that, boy, you could have heard, you could have dropped that sucker and heard, you know, just the echoes of nothingness to Republicans in the legislature,
who are
Republicans first, but who are traditional allies of these business groups.
Right.
I mean, there wasn't a Republican you could find who said, I would even consider that, because, of course, it's the dreaded T word. It's a tax word.
Right.
But you were going to say even Democrats.
Yes, right. Even Fabian was saying he didn't like the idea that it was regressive. It hit the poor. So there still is no consensus. See, that's the problem here, is that everyone agrees there is a problem, but no one agrees on what to do about it, or, you know, how to change what they're doing to make it better. Because all these plans, you have to understand, particularly the governor's plan, it has an effect on the business plans of various healthcare operators, which means they have to give up real money, and they don't. You know, they're just not going to do it. It's 15% of the state economy. It's too big. The stakes are just too big. And, you know, nobody, of course, you know, doctors for years have been saying, oh, we support universal health care. They were the first ones to come out and try to torpedo the governor's plan.
Because it includes a 2% tax on doctors' earnings.
That gets back to the everybody but me kind of philosophy, perhaps. What do you guys make of this whole thing that happened, this dynamic this week of, we're going to put the governor's plan up for a vote in the assembly? Because for those of you who don't know, the governor introduced this proposal in January, but it never became a piece of legislation, either because they wanted it to be a conversation starting point, or others would say that he could never find someone to carry the bill. And so it never was in legislative form. And this past week, Assembly Speaker Nunez said, we're going to put it up for a vote. We're going to prove to the governor that he can't get support for this from Republicans and Democrats. We'll put it up for a vote. And at the 11th hour of this discussion on Wednesday, or on Thursday rather, the speaker decided we're not going to put it up for a vote because negotiations are fruitful, or whatever the proper adjective was.
They actually began to talk. They weren't even talking.
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, there are 2 weeks, or, well, that's debatable, a week and a half. Not a long time.
Minus Labor Day, minus Rosh Hashanah, minus whatever else, they're not going to be in session.
And depending on who gavels down when. But there are only a couple of weeks left in the legislative session, and this is the time of year where it's like everybody's off their meds, and you see these rampant mood swings where, you know, I mean, on Monday, it was the most surreal experience. I think you were both there as well on Monday after the Big Five meeting. All the legislative leaders and the governor met to discuss health care. Nunez and Perotta walk out. They, you know, this was in the morning. We should probably come back. In the morning, Don Perotta is quoted as saying, nothing's going to happen on health care. We poisoned the well with the budget standoff. We're done. Forget it, basically. And Nunez is saying, no, everything's going to be fine. You know, I'm very optimistic. They come out of this Big Five meeting, and again, Nunez is optimistic.
Perotta with the governor and legislative Republican leaders.
Right, and Perotta backs down a little bit from his quotes in the paper that morning. And then Mike Vallines and Dick Akerman, the Republican leaders, come forward, and it's like they were in a different meeting. I mean, listening to these four people talk was like, you know, and I think it just kind of illustrated how far apart and just not even having the same conversation these people are.
Well, did you see? There was a huge press huddle in front of them as they came out the door, and I was sitting right in front, and you could see.
I think you were actually behind me trying to get your tape recorder in while I had my microphone. The scrum.
Yeah,
for those of you who've never seen a scrum of reporters trying to stand outside the governor's office, it's an ugly thing.
It's not
pretty.
Well, and then then the tourists come by, and they're like, "What's going on?"
But I had a shot of there were Fabian and Don were in the front saying, "Oh yes, you know, there's progress." And then behind them, Akerman and Vallines were standing there kind of laughing. And then at some
Funny
point,
ears.
somebody asked, you know, will there be any Republican votes for this? And they both just cracked up, the two Republican leaders, like, no way.
Right. And what I found interesting, and I wrote this in a story I did after that, was that when you hear the Republicans come and talk to the reporters and they start talking about, oh, I think we could find some common ground on health savings accounts and access to clinics. In essence, what they were telling the governor was to think smaller, not bigger. And when have you ever seen Arnold Schwarzenegger want to do something small Everything he wants to do is big and fantastic and incredible.
And that, that follows up on what happened on Wednesday. I mean, 48 hours after this, you know, these dueling press conferences, which nobody seemed to be talking about the same thing, Democrats joined an advocacy group to promote health care for children. And so the speaker was up there saying, hey, we support universal health care reform, but if just in case that doesn't happen, we've got these other bills that would only provide coverage to children, right? These groups are saying, if nothing else, if health care breaks down, let's at least cover the kids. Let's at least cover the kids. And they were so excited because they were going to get a visit from the governor. Arnold Schwarzenegger comes in, and immediately he's asked about just covering the kids. He says, no, we're not going to do that. Why would we do that? It would take just as much energy to do that as it would to do everybody. Let's do everybody. This is at a press conference that was called for the sole purpose of saying, if we can't do the whole thing, let's do it. So, and this is, again, 2 weeks before the end of session. It's just there's a certain level of mania, the tenor to this. And then the speaker saying he was going to take the governor's proposal up and then deciding not to. It's just like, you know, if everyone would just have a nice cup of chamomile tea and a Prozac, maybe we could get something done.
Well, that's true. Emotion is fueling a lot of this. The backstory to this is that there's some dispute about this, but it looks like the governor probably went a little too far last Wednesday when he said he was going
to
veto AB-8.
And they wanted the editorial board of the Sacramento Bee,
Exactly,
think,
right. And they, for weeks, had been saying, we're going to have to come out and do something to show, you know, that we're not going to stand for this. But he went a little further, I think, than they thought they wanted him
Governor
to.
Governor Schwarzenegger went a little farther than his staff thought he was going
That's
to go.
That's true. He said he not only said that he'd veto it, but he said he'd take it to the ballot, too. And so then they kind of tried to soften that a little bit. They called some people in, the Chronicle, the LA Times, to write, you know, to talk to him. And he was a little softer in it. But, you know, it's typical with Arnold that he doesn't walk back his statements. If he goes way out there and his staff tries to clean it up, he won't change what he said, really. Right. So then Nunez was furious, and apparently there were some angry phone calls between Nunez and Susan Kennedy and
the governor's chief of staff.
Right. And so then the next morning, Nunez comes out with this thing, well, I'm going to put it to a vote to show you how delusional the governor really is. And so they were, you know, it was kind of like a schoolyard brawl at that point.
Which kind of seems like a lot of things here, but yeah.
So, I mean, you know, things were clearly spinning out of control. And then they've pulled back a little bit from the brink. Then they started talking, and then Nunez pulled back his vote.
And then there was term limits.
And then there was term limits. Hang on. We're almost there. We're very close to that. I was just going to say, I mean, in wrapping up our discussion about health care, what are you guys looking for? What are the outstanding questions as we go into next week? I mean, for me, one of the questions is, does the governor come off of this issue of everybody has to be covered? And conversely, does the governor come off of his issue about who pays? And do Democrats find anywhere there? I mean, you know, but what do we look for? What are the burning questions about health care that have to be resolved in these negotiations? Is that fair, or is it something else?
Well, I mean, are they going to come up with something real that would really make a difference for people? You know, you have to keep in mind, even the unions that are supposedly backing this Democratic plan, they don't like it either.
Right.
You know, so nobody actually really likes it, which is typical of health care reform. So, I think there's really no way for Arnold to come out of this without it being a huge failure, unless he pulls it out at the very end and there's some agreement that none of us can see how it might happen. So, I mean, the truth of the matter is he set the expectations so high, he is on a course for failure.
Well, he put himself in a box just like he did with AB 32, the global warming bill last year. You know, there was a lot of talk at the end of session last year that the bill that ended up going to the governor's desk was much further out than the bill he wanted, and that he wasn't in a position where he can get away from it because he had been out so public and so forward on this issue, basically had to sign the bill. I think the Democrats will send the governor something. Whether or not they can come to a deal, we'll see. Just given the political dynamic, and we just had the Seinfeld of budget standoffs, which was a two-month standoff about nothing, best I could tell. And now we're talking about real issues with very, you know, deep-seated political interests and philosophical ideas on healthcare reform that, you know, and it doesn't seem like we're very close. It's hard to see how a deal gets done. That doesn't that doesn't mean that something can't get done between the governor and Democrats.
So in some sense, maybe bottom line is the perils of political salesmanship are how much are you selling? What can you deliver? What expectations have you drawn to people out of doing that? Yeah. Well, speaking of selling something and prepping everyone and expecting something to happen, our friend over here, Mr. York, you've been watching something as the week comes to an end that could be, boy, just the ultimate crazy, odd political story of the year in some ways, right, which is the possible missing of the February ballot, on the February ballot of the Term Limits Initiative. Walk people through kind of what happened in a sense.
Well, I don't even know where to begin, but the Term Limits Initiative there is an initiative that was scheduled to be on the February ballot, which would have altered the state's term limits laws, changing it from 14 years. And right currently, term limits are 6 years in the Assembly, 8 years in the Senate. This would have changed the law to reduce the cumulative total that a person can serve in the legislature from 14 years to 12 years, but it could be in either house. The end effect is that the Speaker, Fabian Nunez, would be able to remain as Speaker for six more years.
And the pro tem, Don Parada.
For another four. Right. He would get another four-year term. This was an elaborate political scheme that has been in the works for months.
Let me stop you for a moment. Let's just be fair and say present tense. This is a proposal because you're already presuming it's dead, which is part of the story.
I don't think it's dead. I mean, whether it's dead for February is another question, but it will be on a ballot.
Fair enough. I'm keeping you honest.
Late last year, one of the reasons, at least, that the presidential primary was moved from June, broken off from the June to the February, was to allow this term limits initiative to be on the February ballot so that current legislators could run for reelection. When you think about it, I mean, the entire American political system has been altered by this term limits initiative because once California moved their presidential primary, other states moved theirs and started this race to the front of the line.
Well, but what's happened? I mean, you're basically...
But now it looks like this term limits initiative may not qualify for the February ballot. And it has to do with the number of valid signatures that have been submitted in 58 counties. Everyone's waiting to see what the validity rate of the signed petitions is from Los Angeles County. But there may be an extra 45-day delay in this process, which would push it beyond.
Because the basic point here, just to not shorthand it too much for people, right, is that when they do a random sampling of signatures that are submitted, if they don't have enough of them that are valid signatures, then they have to go to a full count of every signature submitted for an initiative.
Each county.
And that takes a lot of man hours because clearly you've got to go signature by signature by signature. So the way that these well-oiled campaigns get around that is submitting enough signatures and enough valid signatures that the random sampling comes out to be high enough. And what you found over the course of the last 24 hours, am I right, is that the random sampling is not coming out high enough to avoid the hand count, which would take too long to get on the ballot.
That's right. So that hand count would it's taken almost a month for counties to count. This random sampling amounts to a 3% count. You count 3% of all the signatures that were submitted. It's a check, really, more than a count. But it's taken them a month to count 3%. Just think what it's going to take to verify 100% of these signatures.
Therein lies the problem. They don't have enough. They wouldn't have enough days, theoretically, to make it to get on the February ballot.
So,
Anthony, how do trained professionals make a mistake like this? They had the top Democratic consultant in California working on this, right?
Right, and one of the top signature gatherers. These are – I'm sure there will be a lot of investigation into what went wrong and a lot of finger-pointing and blame. I can't help, when you take this in conjunction with what happened with the governor's special election initiatives and all the trouble they had, I can't help but wonder if there isn't some change that maybe we're not, fully grasping in the initiative world, that there isn't something else going on.
Because, with the voters and the way they are about initiatives?
Right. I mean, maybe the validity rates are coming in lower than they have in the past, which is for triggering these full counts. I don't know.
It was harder to gather signatures than they let on.
I was going to say the same thing because, I mean, my own anecdotal experience is that, you know, I've watched people just avoid signature gatherers like the plague at the grocery store because it has become so prevalent. It is just continual there's no off-season anymore, really, for gathering signatures for initiatives. And it seems like people do kind of avoid them. But let me walk back on this just a moment because, I mean, it is not impossible for the term limits modification to make it to the February ballot.
No.
But to get there, several things have to happen. I mean, first of all, if they get enough of the random sampling, they're okay, and that's looking doubtful, but we don't know yet.
Depending on what happens in Los Angeles.
But also, there is an element here about what happens with local elections officials and the top elections official, Secretary of State Deborah Bowen, in getting the hand count started. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Right. Well, as soon as L.A. County reports...
which is the big enchilada in California.
Right, one-quarter of the 1.1 million signatures that were submitted to these counties went into L.A. County. So we're all waiting for L.A. And if L.A. County reports and the sampling falls short, then Deborah Bowen, the Secretary of State, can ask all 58 county election officials to start a full count. So when she has... By law, she has until September 20th to ask the officials to do that. My suspicion is that there's some political pressure to probably expedite that process just a little bit. but then we go back. It's not the Secretary of State. You have to worry about this count is going to be going on 58 different county election offices around the state. So, and county election offices are not often susceptible to political pressure.
Well, and I was going to say, now let's bring in a different dynamic quickly, which is that local elections officials have been sparring with the Secretary of State over voting machines and her decision to not use certain voting machines. They're not exactly like happy campers between local elections officials and the state recently. And one of the most vocal critics of the current Secretary of State has been, drumroll, the Registrar of Voters in Los Angeles County, Connie McCormick. And so... If the registrar in Los Angeles County doesn't get to this point of allowing the Secretary of State to authorize the hand count in time, then it doesn't matter what pressure is put on the Democratic Secretary of State.
Right.
You can't get these things done in time to get it on the February ballot. I mean, there's a whole theater drama behind the scenes that has nothing to do with term limits.
Right. And so many levels.
And what about the budget? Did that play a role in this, too?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I think that, you know, remember the proponents of the term limits initiative had the signatures in, and they held them until the Assembly passed their budget, right? So this is the Assembly budget, right?
And explain the thinking behind that, because this is pretty arcane.
Well, and the theory
was... And
also
political insight, right?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that the proponents, Richard Stapler, we're talking to you, would agree with this assessment about why the signatures were held, but it has been widely speculated that they were trying to capitalize on a wave of positive press about the work the legislature was doing, meeting their, not their constitutional, but their informal deadline on the budget, this July 20th deadline. And then that was going to, you know, snowball into this this new initiative, and everyone was going to love the legislature and tweak the term limits law. They held those signatures for a couple of weeks, and if they had handed them in earlier, you know, there would be no question. I mean, there would have been plenty of time to have this full count.
Well, something tells me we're going to be talking about this again next week because there's a lot still to play out, and the scene will become clearer as to whether or not this really is not going to make the February ballot or whether it has an outside chance. So, Anthony will be hard at work over the next week on the phone. I've seen him on the phone walking around the street, talking to every registrar in the state, working his sources. But let's talk about something else quickly to wrap up the podcast. That has a more, well, I shouldn't say it has a more certain chance of being on the February ballot because it has one huge obstacle known as Arnold Schwarzenegger. But it passed the legislature this week, which was this advisory ballot measure, ask Californians whether they think the U.S. should immediately withdraw from Iraq. The democratically controlled legislature sent it right onto the governor, no Republican votes. The governor can either sign it, place it on the February ballot, or veto it and say, no, it's not worth our time, it's worthless. There's a political stake here for the governor, is there not? And it puts him in a political rock and a hard place. Get it? Sorry.
He's pretty good at slipping out of those things. You know, it's funny. He is the only politician that I can recall who's managed to maintain the position that he's both for a timeline of pulling out, and he's for a total victory in Iraq. And nobody ever seems to question him when he says these things on Sunday morning news shows. But, you know, he was a big supporter of the invasion from the beginning. He's taken the Republican line all along. It's hard to see that he would actually allow this to go on the ballot. And I don't know if there are really that many political consequences for him to just, you know, to veto it and let it die, because I'm not sure that people are that aware of what goes on in Sacramento, the day-to-day ins and outs of...
Now, just to play devil's advocate, if I could for a moment, on the other side, you could make the argument that no one has been more an advocate in recent years of the power of the people, and the people should have a say, and I'm the people's governor, than Arnold Schwarzenegger, and letting the people weigh in on the biggest issue
of
their
time.
Well,
he may be a hypocrite, but that doesn't mean people will know it.
and really, you can make the argument, I mean, what does this really empower the people to do? I mean, if they can...
It's symbolic.
It is symbolic. It's completely symbolic, and I think the governor in the past has... shown a displeasure for these types of symbolic political rituals that, you know, he didn't like Big Five. Remember, no more Big Five meetings, right?
So many things. He was going to destroy or
blow up the boxes.
Yeah, right. And now here he is. He was never going to pass a tax increase, and here he's got a $12 billion, you know, health care plan.
But that's, I think that there's a good out for him because this is a non-binding resolution, and if people really want their say on the issue of Iraq, they can talk to their congressman or...
Right. You know. If this would have the effect of actually pulling the troops out, then I think, of course, the stakes would be much higher. But since it's a basically symbolic thing, I think he could let it die without anybody really noticing.
So two solid votes here on the other side of the studio for he's going to veto it, right? Both think he'll veto it?
I think so.
I would think so.
I don't know.
You're putting us on the spot again.
I know.
But
putting you on the spot.
I mean, you're not.
I think the odds are that I think you make convincing arguments for why he would veto it and what he would say in a veto message of why he's not going to put it on the ballot. I just think it's interesting that it's there. You're right. The hypocrisy level, and God forbid a reporter look at things of a hypocritical nature. But there is an interesting element about a governor who says he cares what the people think, and yet at the same time, he's not into it, even though it doesn't have the weight of law. I mean, I don't know.
Well,
it's
you
a
know,
mess.
He punts on the immigration issue all the time by saying it's a federal issue. Mm. Well, what could be more of a federal issue than
a war?
War,
right.
Yeah.
So, well.
It, you know, it might feel good to express your opinion about, I mean, I don't mean to belittle the importance of the war in Iraq and the strength of people's feelings about it. But, you know, I mean, what is the precedent here that anytime there's a big political issue, we're going to weigh in and just to vent? I mean, isn't that what voters do in public opinion polls? Basically?
People are going to, you know, the angry left is going to focus their attention on Nancy Pelosi, not on Arnold Schwarzenegger, right?
Cindy Sheehan.
So we'll see. He has 12 days to sign it or veto it, and I'm sure we will recap that at some point. So all of these are ongoing discussions, term limits, health care, war in Iraq, ballot measure. We'll have to revisit all of them. But they were, you know, it was nice to talk about something other than the budget this week, was it not?
Yes.
I mean, how many weeks did we talk about the budget, especially on this podcast? Laura, thank goodness for her. She didn't have to sit through. I think Anthony and I have talked about the budget for 7 weeks?
At least.
Yes.
More.
And this week.
You must have very loyal listeners to listen to that.
Loyal, bored, willing to put up with it, such is life.
Or insomniac.
Well, that'll do it this time for Anthony York from Capital Weekly and Laura Kurtzman from the Associated Press. Laura, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm John Myers from KQED and the California Report. We'll see you next time.